should be fine now. So, hi everyone to our talk on Osprey and defeating honey nets. Sorry for the small delay, we had some problems with the internal network and with the two beamers. So, who of you knows what a honey net is? Just as a question. So, many people know, so I can briefly, I just give a short overview over honey nets. A honey net is, according to the definition by the honey net project, a concept in order to learn the tool tactics and motives of the Black Hat community. A typical honey net is depicted over on the slides. As you see, a honey pot typically consists of two applications. The one is the honey wall. The honey wall is a transparent bridge and has two things to do. On the one hand, data capture. On the other hand, data control. Data control means that you install Snort Inline there. Snort Inline is an intrusion prevention system. It's based on Snort. It basically just turns the rules so that someone who owns one of your honeypots can't use an exploit to the outside world. So the exploit is blocked at the honey wall. On the other hand, we do some kind of traffic shaping. For example, that only a limited rate can be the outgoing network flow, or only perhaps 20 TCP connections per day are allowed. The other main function of the honey wall is data capture. That means that you've got a TCP dump or Snort running so that you capture all network traffic that's flowing inside and outside of your honey pot. You also can do data logging of the honey pots on the honey wall. The main part of the honey net is, or are the honey pots. A honey pot is a resource whose value lies in being probed, attacked, or compromised. That means you are interested in who scans your box, who attacks your box, and what do they do if they own your box. So typically you use a Linux, a Solaris, a Windows, or some kind of BSD as an operating system. You just modify it in some small ways, and then you just deploy it. So you've got a couple of servers who have no production value. They just run and you watch them if they get scanned, if they get attacked, or perhaps someone even hacks them. So you want to learn the tool tactics and motives of the Black Hat community. How do you do that? Of course, you have to observe them. But how do you observe someone who's doing things on your net? On the one hand, you've got the TCP dump, so you control all network flows. But the network flow is not interesting if it's encrypted. So if the attacker uses SSH or some other kind of encryption, you can't basically see nothing because you can't decrypt the traffic. So you have to find other ways in order to see what the attacker is doing. If you use some kind of Trojan binary, for example, a Trojan SSH for which you've got the keys, it's useless if the attacker deploys its own tools, for example, his own tool that decrypts the session. So you have got to do another approach. The approach that's currently taken by the HoneyNet project is ZBEC, a tool that has the capability to monitor all activities on the honeypot. For example, you can block all SSH connections. See if someone copies a file via secure copy to your honeypot. You see what's going on. If someone, for example, a burn eye protected binary has to be decrypted before you run it, so you also get the password for the burn eye protected binary. So it basically allows you to see many of the things that can be done on a honeypot. So it also provides the ability to monitor all internal workings of the honeypot. So if no one is connected to your honeypot, you also see what's happening. So if someone owns your box, installs some toolkits, and then logs out, you also see what's happening on that box. And how does ZBEC account this? Basically, ZBEC is a rootkit. The first version was based on Adore. Adore is probably known for you. It's one of the best rootkits currently on the earth. In the current version, version 2.1.7, it's based on it's completely rewritten, and the main part of ZBEC is the hijacking of sysread. So you hijack a syscall, you override it with your own one, and if someone calls now read, you pass this value to the original syscall and the result. You add a header and send it in a covered way via your UDP to another host where all things can be logged. How do we send this in a covered way? It basically creates an SK buffer structure, fills everything in, adds its own header for the CDEP, and then passes this SK buffer structure to the driver, and the driver just sends it on the net. You have to fiddle a bit with the network counter so that no one can see that you're doing some kind of observing. And you've got also some, in the header, some kind of magic value so that you can identify if some protocol or if some packet is a ZDX packet. So if ZDX is installed on every computer on your HANINET, you basically can't see on any of these that ZDX is working, because ZDX also hides on the upflow network layer that you can see this. So all your PCAP-based snippers and all firewall rules are useless against ZDX. We don't want to see that, an attacker shouldn't see that ZDX is running on the host. So we have to hide it. So basically, as a rootkit does this. How do we hide ZDX? In the Torrent installation, ZDX is just a kernel module with a random numeric name, but you can also customize it. For example, we use SND-PCMCIA.0 as a name for our ZDX presentation later. Afterwards, there a second module, cleaner.o, from the Adobe rootkit is loaded. Cleaner.o is a very simple kernel module. It basically just unlinks your module from the module list and then unloads itself. With no pointer in the module list, it's hidden in some kind of form, so you can't see ZDX very easy. To give you an impression about ZDX, we just demonstrated how it works. We've got here a Mac with the IP address 10.11.12.2.1 and a Linux box 10.11.12.1. Currently there's no ZDX running, but we will install ZDX now on this host, and then we will extract all these packages that are sent in a covered channel to the NAC, and then you'll see that I can't see anything here, but he can't see anything what's going on my box. So basically ZDX is a kernel module, so you have to have root rights to install it. Max is currently installing it. Now ZDX should be running. If I type something on this box, perhaps an ls on ID.
It's not running.
It's not running. No. Okay. So I have to wait a bit. As we can see on the the size is not as big as we expected, so we will have probably some little problems to show you everything, but I hope we can manage it. So that you see on the first window, this is just my computer. Now ZDX is installed. As you see on the first part, SMD-PCMCIA is loaded. This is just ZDX in another name. After this, cleaner.o from Adore is loaded, and it unlinks ZDX from the module list, and now we can see basically everything ZDX is running. On the other window, that now should pop up, there's some kind of logging warning. So we've got, if I type something in here, perhaps an ls, an id, -a, shit. So you should see on the other side what commands that I type in. Something like this. And so basically ZDX is able to see everything what's going on the box. So back to
So who are we are and why we are looking into ZDX? We are a research group at the University of Aachen, and we are running a HANINET ourselves. And for a good scientific practice, we see the HANINET as a research tool or as a probe into the internet, and we have to attack our measurement devices and probes to assess the quality of data gathered by this tool. Our main concern is what quality of data does ZDX provide, under the view of attackers circumventing ZBEC. Can we really rely on that we see all attacks on our machines, at least hinted at in the log files provided by ZBEC? The authors of ZBEC were hoping that even if people are able to disable ZBEC, they would see how ZBEC could be disabled. We were not sure about that and tried to attack the assumption, and we were successful with that. So first, as a teaser, we show you our success on that and give only very short explanations on what you are seeing and what's happening there. This is the honeypot, and this show runs on the honeypot, and I'll now start an HTTPS server which has a gapping security hole, so it's easy for me to exploit it. Now there's this HTTPS server running on port A443, and you see there was a lot of logging going on. This is running on my notebook, which emulates the honey wall, but today also the machine of the attacker. Now I will present an exploit code, exploiting the vulnerable server, and then we will upload our own attack tool, KBAS, and we will see in the lower window that there will be next to no logging information. Basically now there's our attack payload is created on the fly. Then we use curl to do a connect to the insecure server and transfer the script payload sh, which is executed by the vulnerable server. And now we were too fast and network too slow. Our attack tool doesn't work, connection refused. That basically means that the attack tool on the server side isn't started. But now it is. So now we are able to execute arbitrary commands on the server without much logging taking place. In the lower corner you see the log window peering up under the other window. And I'll now show the root directory of the honeypot without information being logged by ZBEC. I can get system information from the honeypot, like environment variables or the user ID without information being logged by ZBEC. I can read files, this is etc pathvd, without being logged by ZBEC. I can upload files. And I can execute other files. In this case I will execute a vulnerable SUID program we placed on the honeypot and use it to start another server of this KBAS tool, running now as root. You now see there was a little logging because our server is completely coded in Python to do rapid exploit prototyping, and the Python binary when loaded does some things which could be logged by ZBEC. If anybody needs it, he can convert the tool to C and avoid this logging easily. Now I connect to the other KBAS server running as root. I again can get system information. For example, you now see that the effective user ID in the middle of the screen is 0 instead of 65534, which means nobody. So now we have root. I can again show files without being logging, in this case etc shadow. Now I'm executing a special module on our server which tries to find the ZBEC binary in memory. You see again, that took some logging place, but because we accessed the memory very aggressive, most of the packets were dropped, so ZBEC isn't logging anything really, but just pulling out error messages. This is because we are doing big reads in DevKMem. We could have accessed DevKMem by mmapping it, and that wouldn't have led to logging. We should do that sometime. Now our tool detected a kernel address where we can remove the ZBEC module. And now we can jump to this kernel address, then get a funny GNU people warning that we'll taint the kernel with our attack tool, which is exactly what we're planning to do. And now ZBEC is disabled.
So basically I can type now something on this box, and as you can see, no logging is from the type uname is L, so we don't see any output. So we basically unloaded ZBEC.
So let's have a look on how we did that and what we did.
So as you saw, we are able to detect ZBEC, we are able to avoid logging, we are even able to unload ZBEC. So basically we compromise the on report
question. For example, you can use it as a stepping stone in the network. You can use it to attack the honey wall, which would be probably a nice stepping stone. And in fact, often I ask, what's the point in those things people are doing? What's the point of trading 50 terabytes of French movies? People just do, and basically we are interested in could we do, because if we could, others could. Basically it's our assessment on the data quality of the honeypot.
So, and now we want stepwise to explain what we've done and how we've done it. On the first part, I want to explain how we are able to detect ZBEC. If you think of it, ZBEC is basically a rootkit, so there come several ways in mind how to detect it. The first one is based on the honey wall. As I said before, the data capture and data control is done on the honey wall. So the operator of HoneyNet uses snot inline and some kind of connection restricting there. So you can probably, just if you open many connections or if you send an exploit from a honeypot to the outside world, if you watch it, you can probably see that there's something malicious going on in the middle. We don't go into details, let's let it as an exercise. And also there was a flag article, I think, in one of the fake threads. The other thing that comes to mind is the latency. ZBEC packs everything into a UDP packet and sends this over the network and then logs it there. So if we are able to generate lots of logging data, perhaps we are able to see some latency effects so that we can make the logging unreliable and also detect that ZBEC is running. As I said, ZBEC also fiddles with the network traffic counters. Perhaps we can fiddle with them too and detect that they are changed. ZBEC also uses a simple form of syscall table modification, and also we can check the syscall if everything is correct, and then detect if ZBEC is running. With the help of Kima.O, ZBEC loads itself and hides itself, so perhaps we are even able to discover it that there's a hidden module, and perhaps we also can do some other craft memory in order to detect it. So, in the first part, we want to go into detail for latency. We found something that's called DB attack. So, with the help of DB, a very simple tool, I can generate lots of traffic. And with the help of DB, I can generate so much traffic that the latency effects come to, that you can see the latency effects and therefore detect that ZBEC is running. We've also got a small demo on this. So at first, we are already logged in into the box. We then ping from there to the MAC. Let's see what the round trip time from this crossover cable is. So, after that, we're going to to load another module that fiddles with the network counters. So at first we ping, we send some packets, some SMP packets. We've got a latency time of about 0.3 milliseconds or so. Then we load a kernel module that fiddles with prop net dev. So we change the counters as they were originally and see what happens.
I think we will make that later.
Oh, sorry. We now start DD in background so that we generate lots of traffic. Let's see. And now we do the ping again. As you can see, there's some very long delay now. We've got about 10 times the delay from before. So you can see that the delay is going up, and perhaps this is based on the presence of Zbeg. As you can see, it doesn't react correctly because there's so much traffic going on. It's a kind of denial of service attack against the Honeywell. So, back to the demonstration. Sorry for left traffic counters. So, as we see, as I said before, Zbeg fiddles with the network counters. It basically chains procnet dev and subtracts all SDK buffers that it sent in a covered manner. So if we fiddle everything back and then compare the output of ifconfig with the output of procnet dev, then we see that there's something malicious going on because sometimes the network counters are running backwards, or you also have jumps inside the network counters. We've got also a demonstration on this. First, we take a look at to see that we've got about 22 kilobyte of data. We are logged in into the host via SSH, so we generate about 2 kilobyte or so per second. So now we load a module. The module just turns the counters in procnet dev back, it fiddles with the counters in procnet dev, and then everything should be. Then we should see that the network counters are much higher than we expect them to be. So if now run ifconfig, we see that the network counter is more than 30 megabytes. And if we unmount the module again, so if we do an error mount, we see that that the network counter is switching back again. We've got some delay because DD is running in the background. So now we've got more than 50 megabytes of data. So this is the real network counter, including all data sent via Zbeg over the line. And now it's back again to about 48 kilobytes. So if you just change procnet dev again to its original state, you see that there. Yeah, that's it, does something with this. Okay, now to the syscall modification. There you can see on the left side a normal syscall table. This is exit, this is read, this is write, this is open. So, these are also all pointers into the kernel memory, and yes, they are all function pointers. Now if I load another module, for example Zbeg or another rootkit, it basically changes the pointer so that it points to another location. After that, every time the syscall is called, then it handles this, perhaps transfers or changes the output and gives everything back. So if we load it on a box, and normally, so this is the output of a kernel module that just outputs the memory location of the read and the write. As you see, they are not far apart, but if we now load the kernel module, then we see the read is far apart from the write, so this is also a sign that Zbeg is loaded.
So Zbeg is a hidden kernel module, and if we could find it, we could start poking into its inner data structures to extract the variables used by ZBEC, and we probably could disable ZBEC. Modules in Linux start with a module header, which is defined in include Linux module age, and which looks like this. And it gives us a lot of data to fingerprint on and use for heuristics. First, there is the size of the module structure, which is 96 on Linux 2.4. Then we have pointers into the kernel memory pointing to the next module in the list of modules, which should be another valid module structure, and to the name of the module, which should be an ASCII string. Then there are pointers into the module itself for the init function of the module and for the cleanup function. And there are variables which have only a small range of values, usually between 0 and 2. And we can use all this to see if this could be a valid module structure we have found in memory. It's further facilitated this that all module header data, and in fact all module data, in the kernel is reserved by the vmalloc function. And the vmalloc function aligns memory to page boundaries, so we have only to check every 4K if this could be a module structure. And the vmalloc function starts allocating memory at vmalloc start and goes only for vmalloc reserved bytes. That is usually 128 max. So we have to check every fourth kilobyte of memory in 120 max if this could be a valid module structure, which is not that much. Now a presentation of that, we will use the tool Rootkit Hunter, which was published in FRAC. So you see with lsmod, but we see nothing about the ZBEC module. I lost the tool. No. I lost the object file. So you just have to believe the screenshot. This module hunter module, when installed, it adds a proc entry show module. So if you get that proc entry, you get no output. But then if you look into the message, you have an output very similar to the output by lsmod. And you see that there's an additional module, sound PCMCIA, which is the hidden ZBEC module. And if you find out that between lsmod and the output of module hunter, there's a difference at an additional module, you can be sure that there's something very fishy. So it's a honeypot, or this machine owned by somebody else already, which is a kind of honeypot too. If we found the module structure, we can start to extract the variables used by ZBEC from the memory after the module structure. And this is quite difficult because the authors of ZBEC started to hide the variables very good. Basically, this is a Perl program which is executed on every compilation of ZBEC, permutating the position of the different variables which are placed in a big block of empty memory. So they have this block of memory reserved in the ZBEC kernel module, and then drop at random locations the real variables, like this. And if you have a memory dump, then it looks like something like this. So there are variables scattered around the place, and the places change with every compilation. But we can start doing educated guesses if we have this block of memory, which the stuff might be we're seeing there. For example, if we have this value, this might be an IP address, but if we check, this is an IP address in the multicast range, which would be highly unlikely. We are looking in this case for the IP address of the honey wall, which ZBEC has to know to send out the data there. So if it's not an IP address, it might be the magic value used by ZBAC. If we look at this value, that's an valid IP address, so it might be the address of the Honeywall collecting the data from ZBAC. If you look at this value, it's a nice port number. This might be used as a port for getting out the data to the Honeywall. And if you look at this very short byte values, they terribly look like fragments of a MAC address. So we can use this as a heuristic to find, to guess at the values ZBAC saved in memory. This is an output of Nosebreaker Pi, which was on the Black Hat CD also. It's a Python program which traverses the memory structures of the Linux kernel, which is a little bit tricky nowadays because the Linux people recently decided to remove the kernel symbol for the system call table because nobody wants it and nobody needs it. Perhaps it's even a security measure. So we first have to resolve other symbols in the system call table and start scanning from there. It's not other kernel symbols, and start scanning from there, which could be the system call table. This usually works out. So in line 6 or 7, we have found something which looks like the system call table. And there we already see that this read is at a completely different location than this write and this open. So probably this read is hijacked, or the output of the program is wrong. It says probably this write is hijacked, which is makes no sense. So we have then we find out by via the way of the heuristics if there's a hidden module, and if there's a hidden module, we try to analyze the data structure in this module. So we have this sound PCMCIA module, which is hidden. And then we have a list of possible MAC fragments. And really, in fact, this FFFFFF is the MAC address we use for sending out ZBAC data, the broadcast address. And if you would search harder, if we have EFconfig output to compare, and some of the other bytes are the MAC address of the honeypot. So the sender address of the ZBAC packages. We also have candidates for port values, and again 1111 and 2222 are the ports we used in our example for sending out the data. And we have a list of possible values in this data block which could be IP addresses, and 10.11.12.1 is the address of our Honeywall, 10.11.12.2 is the other address of our Honeywall. So we could narrow down the possible addresses of a Honeywall from a 2 to the power of 32 about to a dozen. And the magic values 2, which are 32-bit values to identify the ZBAC packages and to hide them, we have a good dozen of candidates which could be magic values, and in this case the magic value we had used was dead beef. It's also found. And the nice thing is, this Nosebreak also gives us the addresses of key functions, the ZBAC module, the init function, and the cleanup function. So how could we disable ZBAC? There's a very nice way ZBAC has built-in disablement by the cleanup function. We just have to call it. And friendly, like it is, it removes the hijacked syscall table pointer, fixes up everything, and we are happy ever each after. The memory of the module is not freed, but we don't really care. The little problem is that the cleanup function in ZBAC is implemented buggy, and that after the cleanup, there are still fragments in the network stack from the ZBAC module, so you probably shouldn't run a production server with a disabled ZBAC module for days. But the machines keep up, they usually start crashing when you shut them down. The more obvious way would be to just overwrite the sysread pointer again in the system call table with the original value. The problem is how to get the original value. And the crazy way is to just leave with this read pointer how it is and patch over the ZBAC module to get rid of the logging functions. That is might be feasible if ZBAC is not as a module but compiled into the kernel, then probably it's your only resort to patch the kernel at this place.
So, in the first part we saw how to detect ZBAC, in the second part we saw how to disable it, and now in the third part we want to take a look at how to avoid logging. Why do we have to do that? Because there's something that we can't stop to being logged. For example, all network traffic has to be logged because we are connected to a honeypot and we have to use that line. So everything that's flowing in and flowing out can be monitored. Also ZBAC allows us to see everything that's read by the system. So all calls to read are also or can be logged. So we have to find a way to disable it. So, and if you compromise a honeypot and then sometime after that the operator will notice it and perhaps we will do some analysis. Perhaps we will shut it down and do some forensic, and with the help of the forensic analysis we'll also obtain some data that we left on the machine. Also, perhaps your service will do some kind of logging to the syslog that can help the operator of the honeypot to see what's going on. So there are some ways we can't stop to something that we can't stop to be logged. But perhaps we can do something against that. That's logging of network traffic. As I said before, if I encrypt my network traffic, the operator can log it, but it's useless for him because he can't decrypt it. So whenever possible, I should use encryption and not leave the keys on the machine. The problem is, how do we deliver our first exploit? The first exploit is problematic because ZBAC is running on the box. So everything that's read by this exploit can also be monitored and can be used for analysis later. So we have to find a way to deliver our initial exploit in a secure manner, perhaps an HTTPS exploit. As we saw in the first demonstration, we use a vulnerable HTTPS server. Another point to avoid logging of network traffic that's probably very hard is to disable the logging hosts. It's not always feasible because you can't be sure where something is logged, and perhaps the logging server is far away or very secure. So perhaps this is left as an exercise for you. So use encryption whenever possible and then nothing can go wrong, basically. ZBAC hijacks reads, so everything that's read is monitored. And who does use read? Nearly every program, because everything that's read, perhaps in a configuration file or any other file, has to pass this read, so everything is monitored. Can we perhaps avoid it? Yes, there are ways. For example, all network programs use receive. Receive has the nice property that it doesn't use read. So if you read from a socket via receive, nothing is blocked via ZBAC. But can we,
okay. But one problem is, which was hard to grasp for us at first, if we have this encrypted communication with SSHD, where is the read happening that ZBAC still is able to intercept? We have the socket, which usually uses receive, but even if it would use read, there's the encryption around the communication, so nobody should be able to log anything meaningful except of perhaps timing information or something like that. But the thing is that the SSHD isn't able to do anything interesting. If somebody is logged in, the SSHD connects to a shell or something else. And this connection is where ZBAC attacks, because there's a file descriptor on every end or at the shell and at the SSHD connected by a Unix pipe, and there the bash is reading the keystrokes you send via the SSHD, and the SSHD is reading back the answers. And that is where the logging takes place and where encryption doesn't help us so far.
So now we take a look at what is ZBAC logging. As you see on the right side, there's the ZBAC header, you see that there's a magic number that's used to identify a valid ZBAC packet. The version number is currently 2, and there are some other things like the timestamp, the PID, the UID, the file descriptor, which first 12 bytes of the program name and the length of the total packet. So if you take a look at this, PID and UID calling read are locked, so basically this is an information the operator of the honeypot has. The file descriptor is the FD, perhaps you can fiddle with it, perhaps you can change 0, 1 and 2 so that they have another meaning, and so you can make the work of the host owning for the forensic much harder. On the other side, you can see that the name of the program or the first 12 bytes are also locked. Perhaps you can even fiddle with this if we copy the binary to another location, or if we do other things, we can fiddle with it and make the work of the forensic much harder. So, as we saw, the tool DD helps us to squeeze many data through the line. We do effectively a kind of DOS, denial of service attack, against the honeypot. So this helps us because now all logging is not reliable anymore. If we just send enough data through our network interface, it's probably that some packets are lost. As we saw in one of the demos before, there were a message from ZBAC that it lost some packets, and so the logging of ZBAC is unreliable if many data are sent via the network. But that's not very reliable for us because we can't say what is exactly not logged. So it's not reliable for us. So we have to look for another way. Another way would be MMAP. Perhaps we can use MMAP to emulate read. And can we do it? Yes, we can. Exactly not everything, but we can most things that we can do with read also MMAP. MMAP has the nice property that it's very hard to intercept because, for example, if I just map 2 gigabytes of memory into another location, then I can't log everything. I can't log 2 gig of memory and send them via a network interface. MMAP has the nice property that it works on all regular files, so everything what's a regular file can be mapped directly into memory, and then I can work with it. There are some nasty things if I want to do, if I want to use, for example, defrandom, I can't use any device, I can't use any pipe, because the pipe isn't a file, so I can't MMAP it. So I've got some things I can do, not everything, but MMAP is enough, I can do most things that I have to do.
So we are looking for a way to completely avoid read. The first thing is we have to say goodbye to our shell, because the shell uses read to get your keystrokes, as shown above. We need something which directly talks to the network and directly executes the commands. If you think back of the picture I've shown you, if the SSHD would execute the commands instead of the shell, there would be nothing to log for ZBAC. A very nice thing which helps us at this is that the exec system call doesn't use read internally. Sometimes libraries are read after a program is exec via read. Sometimes they are mmapped. I'm not really sure which happens when. And script languages like Python read the thing in, but the original exec system call results in no read system call. So ZBAC can't log which programs are executed as long as they don't read any data. Another thing is that the process name, we can mess with that very easily. We can start to renaming things, for example, VI to date or something like that, and that will start giving the forensic examiner a really hard time to make sense out of the ZBAC log files. So we can read files unnoticed by mmapping them. We can possibly execute programs unnoticed unless they don't read to my libraries. Since file names are not locked, the names of the files we're reading from, we can give the impression of reading certain files. For example, I create a file temp.xxx, which looks, the contents looks like an etc password VD file, and read that via cat or what else, and the forensic examiner again has a hard time finding out what's being read there and what's being happening. And we can give the impression that we are executing programs which we don't. For example, we can copy a harmless binary like cat to a name like a binary we aren't supposed to run, like Oracle Server or whatever, and start this. And again, the forensic examiner will have a hard time with that. So how did we get all these things together? We wrote this tool, KeyBase, which does the direct execution with the encrypted network communication its main step, so avoiding using a shell or any external tools where we can go without them. KeyBase is certainly proof of concept code, and what we consider what innovative is that it's written in Python. It's a network attack tool which is written in a very high level language and gives us some really nice things and possibilities to play with it. And the nice thing is it's very independent on the target platform. As long as there's a Python interpreter, which is usually there because all the Red Hat tools use Python, our program can execute there without regard of the used libraries and the used binary format and so on. The KeyBase can do everything you can expect from a basic shell. In fact, we could give the KeyBase client a front end like a shell, but because we are programmers and not system administrators, we more like to do function calls instead of typing commands. And it's highly dynamic. It's interesting to note that in the last week, in the newest FRAC, the GRUK published a tool which has very similar aim, executing without using the shell and pushing your code over the network, executing it in memory without ever writing it to disk. But it has a very different architecture because it's written in C and you have to jump to so many loops to make something highly dynamic in C. KeyBase uses TCP sockets for networking, but also could use standard in or standard out or something else. For example, if you have an exploit which still has an open socket or an open whatever, you could use that for communication with KeyBase. And on top of that socket, it implements a crypto layer based on Diffie-Hellman. Basically, we couldn't use any other form of encryption because we have to assume that the initial exploit code, so the KeyBase server, is captured by a forensic examiner, so there's no sense in putting keys into the binary. Well, it's not really a binary because it's a Python program. But that's not that bad because Diffie-Hellman protects against passive attacks and the Honeywall is just a passive device. So if you use Diffie-Hellman, there isn't any way that the communication can be decrypted post-mortem. Only a man-in-the-middle attack could break our Diffie-Hellman. Together with Diffie-Hellman, we use AES, and the crypto layer also provides compression and random length padding, so that we that from the network traffic, nobody can guess at the sizes of our commands and guess which commands we might have executed. The main problem for implementing the crypto layer was getting entropy, since we couldn't use sysread without being locked by ZBEC, and we couldn't use defrandom with nmap. We had to read from defrandom, and we had to assume that the data from defrandom is locked by ZBEC, and so you know if you have no random data, or if the attacker knows your random data, all your cryptography is already compromised. We countered that by doing something like the DD attack, And hoping that some of our input from DevRandom would be dropped by ZBEC, and we did some other things to get some entropy. For example, we used thread races and we hashed the whole content of var and TMP, which is slow but should give us some kind of entropy. And we used the network counters and the program table and so on. So basically we stuffed everything in and hoped something would be at least enough to get random data with very good and forensic examiner at that time. And on top of the crypto layer is a Python-specific keyless layer, which use serialized objects to transfer commands and so on. And that is a nice thing. With using Python, I could transfer very complex data between the client and the server. The keyless layer is designed to be async, of course, but at the moment it isn't implemented. And commands can work on several objects on the server at once. So I can several commands in one data package and can basically give the command several parameters like files to work on. Twist on keyless is that the keyless server just knows one command, add command. So I have to transfer the keyless server to the target host to get my whole thing running, but somebody examining can learn very little about it because it just knows this one command, add command. And then I connect via a cryptographic connection and push all the intelligence in the server. Basically, the code I really use in keybase is taken from the client, serialized at an in-memory object, not at source code, and sent to the server. That's added to the namespace and memory space of the server and now can used and be executed from the client. I found out that this is also a very nice thing to develop code because you never have to restart your server while development. You just edit the client and start the client and it pushes again the new code into the server and executes it there. This means that most of the intelligence and code in keybase just exists in the RAM, at least as long as there's no swapping. Commands implemented in our proof of concept code is reading and writing from files using mmap, so no logging by ZBEC, secure deletion, so overwriting the file, then truncating it, then renaming it, and then deleting it. Direct execution via exec. It would be nice to add something which executes other programs without using the kernel, like the userland exec thing, but implementing that in Python will be really hard. And listing directories, and so on. So, more information and in deep academic discussion of the subject can be found in our paper Nosebreak Attacking HoneyNets, which was published at the Information Assurance Workshop in West Point and won the Best Paper Award. And on my homepage, the URL is down there. There also are the slides available and movies of all the demonstrations. So if you think the demonstration here was too small, the font or something like that, you can replay them there. So, questions? No questions?
Point out, you were talking about getting the IP addresses for clients, say server,
Yeah, the question was, it was a statement that the Honeywall doesn't have to have an IP address. That's right, but at least you can see what IP address the HoneyNet operator put into ZBEC.
And you also have to provide an IP address for the logging host. So, that doesn't have to be the real one, but you get some information.
That's it. Okay, thank you very much.